Welcome to Really You, a podcast about wearing your voice well, brought to you by Reitmans. I'm your host, Chris Bergeron. In this episode, I get to chat with drag royalty, equal parts ballerina, showgirl, and 90s supermodel. Brooklyn Heights is drag perfection. Known as the Queen of the North, Brooklyn is the first Canadian drag queen to climb the ranks of RuPaul's Drag Race. And she's the host of the very first season of Canada's Drag Race. And today, we'll go behind the makeup with her.
Hello, Brooklyn.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
It's a real privilege to have you on this shoot.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Your energy is really amazing.
Oh.
you really brought it to the screen.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee.
Lots of coffee this morning.
And practice.
Yes, and practice.
Let's talk about the t-shirt that you co-designed with Reitmans.
Yes.
Could you describe it for us?
Well, it's gray, which is my favorite color. I'm not a bright color person. I love black and grays and whites with pops of color. So it's gray, and it says a beautiful kind of pin-up-y image of me, kind of a Marilyn Monroe-esque slash Anna Nicole from her Guess ads, I guess you could say. And there's a little bit of neon pink.
Yeah, there's an 80s thing.
I love the 80s. So it's kind of 80s pinup, I guess you could say.
I guess is it the type of image that you would look to as a kid and feel, one day this is what I want to be?
Exactly. I mean, it's like in my head, kind of the fantasy that I've created around Brooklyn. She's this powerful bombshell supermodel, larger than life. And I think that kind of, my t-shirt kind of encapsulates that.
So she's a bombshell who cares.
Yeah, she's a bombshell who cares.
Yeah, so the proceeds of the t-shirt is linked to a cause as well that is dear to your heart.
The 519 Community Center in Toronto, right in the gay village in Toronto. It's where I kind of grew up. I grew up in the village, essentially. My school I went to, the National Ballet School of Canada, was right down the street in the gay village. So every day I would have to walk through this neighborhood to get to school. So I kind of really grew up in Toronto's gay village, and the 519 is kind of at the heartbeat of that. And it's a community center. They do so much for the community. It's an all-inclusive space for everybody. They do incredible workshops, programs, and it's just really nice that our community in Toronto has that.
Yeah, it's the beating heart.
Yeah. So I'm very thrilled I get to give back a little bit to them.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
When you were walking to school through the village, did you think that one day you would be able to merge both aspects of your personal culture?
Oh, God. No, not at that point. I was just like, I was so like, I was in the closet and I was raised very Christian. So it was all very like, taboo. And I was just like shocking and like, but I loved it. Like I loved looking in the bars and sometimes you'd see a drag queen on the street or see a drag queen performing. And it was all just so shocking, I guess. And intriguing. I was very intrigued.
So you had to, I guess, work on yourself almost to say, I want to go there. This is what I want to do.
I knew I wanted to go there. I wouldn't allow myself to. I thought it was wrong and dirty and seedy. Which is a little seedy, but that's
well,
fine.
There's a bit of that going on. That's the fun part, probably.
Exactly.
So what were the steps that actually brought you to saying, no, I want to explore that side of the culture?
I think just self-acceptance, accepting who I was as a gay man, and then also being of age where I actually could go to the places, which helped, and kind of growing into yourself and growing more confident in myself and just realizing that I was allowed to do these things and it didn't make me a terrible person if I wanted to go to a gay bar or even if I wanted to put on a wig. It's all just, I think everything, you just have to give yourself some time and a little bit of grace to grow into yourself.
And there's so much work that comes in developing the persona that you develop. And what I find amazing among drag queens is actually the time that is fairly short, typically, in which you learned how to master makeup and costume and dance and all these things. That happens within a few. It's like a kind of puberty in a sense. It's a circus, a second puberty.
It really depends. Yeah. Honestly, it took me a little bit longer. I'm not. Some of the kids these days, it's in like 2 years, they're like, bam, a fully, or even a year, like their makeup is perfect, their hair is perfect, the costumes are perfect. Like, for me, it was much more of a gradual thing of like experimentation and thinking one thing was fine, and then a year later, looking back and being like, what the fuck was I doing for the last year? Like, it was a very slow, I would say, I mean, I've been doing drag now for 8 years full time, mm-hmm. and I feel like I've kind of just reached where I'm like, okay, you're polished, you look really good. And yeah. even now, I still learn new tricks all the time. I still change things up. Like, I'm never satisfied, if that makes sense. And that's my favorite thing about this art form, is that you're never satisfied. There's always something to do, something more to learn, another way to grow. Like, there's always a new trick or something. Like, it's just very interesting. It's a very interesting art form to be a part of, because there's always something new to learn and you never stop learning.
It's like being a Jedi.
Mm, totally. Jedi drag queen.
Jedi drag queen. Well, you were saying it's a bit in the spot that launches this campaign. Mm-hmm. You say that being a drag queen is like being a superhero. It's
yeah.
putting on your cape.
Yeah, absolutely. The wig is like a cape to a superhero.
Is it the same person?
I don't become like a completely different person, I don't think. I mean, I think Brock is a lot quieter and more reserved.
Yeah.
I'm just, when I'm a boy, I don't like attention. I like to be like in the background. Like, I'm a people watcher. I like to be in like a corner watching people just sitting. Mm. Like, when I go out, I don't like to be the center of attention. I don't want attention drawn to me. Like, I'm like an introverted extrovert. I like being around people, but I like being separate from them as well.
So fame must have been a bit of a challenge with that.
A little bit, yeah. Like, it's hard. It's hard sometimes when you just want to go to a bar and people keep coming up and asking to take your picture. But it's also lovely that people want to take their picture with me. So it's kind of like this weird double-edged sword. But it all comes with the territory. I'm so blessed and lucky to get to do this that a little inconvenience now and then is not a big deal for me. And if someone wants their picture taken with me, who am I to say no?
Exactly, yeah.
Like, it's fine.
You're like an ambassador now.
I guess, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I read somewhere that, was it last year at Pride, you met Justin Trudeau?
I did, yes.
Well, that must be something.
Yeah, he's hot.
There's that.
He's very handsome, and he's a wonderful kiss. No, not a wonderful kiss. He's a wonderful hugger. He gives really good hugs.
Does he?
Yeah. I was saying a wonderful kisser because I was like fantasizing. No, he was really, he's just a really cool guy. It was great talking with him. He's very engaging. He's obviously very charming and charismatic. Yeah. And I just think it's great, given what's happening with political leaders in the world today, that the leader of our country shows up for Pride
yeah.
and walks in the parade.
Yeah.
Not a lot of other first world countries can say that right now.
No.
So
do you think that we've been talking to other people mm-hmm. in the queer community and in this campaign, and I asked the question of optimism, whether people are optimistic as to what's happening in the world right now for people like us.
You know, some days yes, and some days I'm like, well, we're all probably going to die soon, so.
Wow.
You know, I'm a realist, and I've never been a super big optimistic person. I'm much more like see things in a realistic light, and like sometimes I'm like, what is happening in the world? You just look around, and it's just like, it just seems like the world is ending. Like,
yeah.
And people, it's like we're going backwards in time. We're reverting back to these old ways of hate and intolerance and prejudice. And I'm like, and you just think, and I'm like, nothing's ever really been fixed. Like, people have just kind of hidden their true feelings about other people. Nothing's changed.
No.
And now it's becoming socially acceptable again to be racist, to be homophobic, to be, like, all of these things. And it's just like, it's really just, like, disheartening, honestly. But I think there is always hope. And I think that's all we kind of have to cling on to is our hope and our beliefs, and we have to get out there and vote and make the change we want to see happen.
Do you feel that on a personal level? Have you had moments where, you know, nasty comments or?
No, I mean, not personal.
You feel the love.
I've felt mostly love. I'm very lucky. Like I don't experience a lot of the hate that other people have to experience. I'm a white male, and it doesn't yes. really get much more privileged than that.
Yeah.
So I'm
a famous white male.
I'm a famous, essentially a famous white man.
Yeah.
And so I'm privileged, and I realize that. And so I don't understand how horrible it must be for people of color or people who are not seen in the same light as me, unfortunately. Like, how difficult it must be, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, obviously.
Well, there's still people who kind of are homophobic towards you. Absolutely. But I think in terms of negativity and homophobia and stuff like that, I kind of get the least of it.
And you're lucky.
I'm very lucky, but there's a lot of people out there who have it a lot worse than me.
What would you say is the role of a drag queen? It's such a world where everything you just talked about happens.
I think we kind of have to be the whistleblowers.
Oh, I mean, you do, huh?
I feel a little bit like, yeah, like if you see something, say something.
Right.
You know, like we have to stick up for each other and we have to stick up for our own. And I don't think that just goes for drag queens. I think that goes for everybody. I think we kind of have to be leaders and kind of show people how it's done in a way. I think people look to us as kind of like tastemakers, trendsetters. And if we start being maybe kinder to each other, more accepting, still, it's a fine line between like, because like drag queens are shady and they're bitchy and that's lots of fun.
Yeah.
But I think there's a way to do it where it's always an underlying of kindness. If that makes sense. Like, I still wanted to have, like, drag to have an edge and people to have an edge because I think that's fun and that's very my sense of humor. I'm very cut and dry and sarcastic.
Yeah.
But I think we can all kind of lead with a little bit more kindness overall.
Are you saying that because you're Canadian?
No. No,
no, I just think... But is that, you know, vision of a Canadian drag queen?
I know.
Should probably be that.
Kind, sweet.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not like... I'm a kind person, but I'm not a saint. I have my moments. I have my bitchy moments. I have my shady moments like everybody else. But essentially, I believe I'm a good person and I believe in the good in other people overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you do see yourself a little bit as a flag bearer in a sense.
Yeah, I think I've kind of been put in that role as an ambassador for Canada and a flag bearer for Canada.
Yeah, you even have government agencies tweet about you.
I know. So like, yeah. So I guess so. So I try to do my best to uphold that and make everybody proud. It's a lot of pressure, and but I try.
What's interesting about drag today as well is that it's not just something that is interesting for queer communities and obviously it's a much broader fan base. And cis women
yes,
look up to you.
They love it.
And so what does it feel like to be a role model for women? You know, what do you feel you have to teach women? And maybe then we'll flip the question into what you learn from women as well.
What do I feel I have to teach women?
If there's, I mean,
how to blend their contour.
Something.
Well, I think they see us feeling empowered and sexy, and it kind of makes them want to be a little bit more, make them feel more confident with themselves. I think by seeing drag queens, women kind of feel like they get permission to try different things, to step outside of the box a little bit, be it with their hair, with their makeup, with their clothes.
Yeah.
They kind of, we encourage them to like spice things up a little bit.
Maybe there's a notion if she can do that.
If she can do that.
Then I can.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, if you just look, like, if I look in the last 10 years, how much women's fashion has changed. Like women nowadays, like 10 years ago, women didn't wear wigs, women didn't wear fake eyelashes.
No.
Like women didn't wear makeup like they wear now. Women now are drag queens.
Yeah.
Like they have emulated what we do.
Yeah.
Like we've copied from them almost. Like we became characters of women and then women have kind of like taken that back almost because you see women now in broad daylight with full contour, highlight, lashes. Women wear wigs now.
Yeah.
And I mean, they wore wigs before, like in the 70s and the 60s, it was a big thing. But like all of a sudden, like women all the time are just wearing wigs.
Which is an interesting definition of power as well, because a lot of the interviews we're having in this series are about authenticity.
Exactly.
As well. So, but authenticity sometimes comes through artifice, comes through makeup, comes through
designing
yourself.
It's a form of self-expression.
Yourself.
I think what I'm trying to say very badly and in a roundabout way is that, like, I think drag queens kind of inspire women to be more self-expressive and to try new things and to be braver. Mm-hmm. I think they see us being brave and they're like, well, if they can do that, I can do that too. Why not? I can be that fabulous. They want me, they inspire me to be that fabulous.
There's that notion of being a work of art also.
Exactly.
That is, you know.
A walking work of art.
A walking work of art. Mm-hmm. It'd be amazing if more women every day could wake up in the morning and say, I am a walking work of art.
feel that confidence and that it's the power it gives you. Drag really is power.
So now you're in a stage in your career where you're famous enough and you're big enough to have drag children of your own.
Ooh.
No?
I hate children. I'm just kidding. I love kids. Yeah. I don't have time. I don't have time right now for that. And I honestly haven't found anybody that I want to give my name to. Like, it has to be, I have a drag name picked out for somebody, whoever it is, but I just haven't found someone with that special, like, thing that doesn't have a name already, that doesn't have an established career already, that I'm like, ooh, you.
Yeah.
Like, I want to invest in you.
How much effort is that, actually, when you...
It depends. It's as much effort as you want to put in.
Yeah.
So, my drag mother was kind of just, like, a mentor. She was always there if I needed any help with wigs, wig questions, makeup questions, outfit advice, like stuff like that. She was just someone who was always there. She let me do my own thing, mm-hmm. but she would give the advice if she was asked it. So I think that would kind of be my role as well. You gotta let people figure out their own way and kind of help when they ask for it or when they really need it.
Having a mentor is so important, mm-hmm. and that's certainly something that you know is an issue among cis women as well, which mm-hmm. is who's going to teach me to navigate through life? Who is the wise person in my life that mm-hmm. can actually, you know, get me through things? And
yeah.
It's important to have that, and it's great to see that also being such an important part of other forms of culture like drag culture.
Yeah, I mean it's very important, especially because in the gay culture, a lot of gay people are shunned by their families.
Yeah.
And so we have to create our own a lot of the times. We have to, and that's kind of where drag families come in too. It's kind of the same as in the voguing scene.
Yeah.
The houses, the families that they have to create because they've been shunned by their actual families, their blood families. And that's one of the great things about being part of the LGBTQ I. Did I forget any letters? Are there more letters now?
There's two S. Just say a plus and
okay, LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
I never know. Is that we get to create our own family. We get to create these amazing, we have this amazing community that we just get to kind of immerse ourselves in and just choose our own people.
Everyone needs a chosen family.
Absolutely.
I think.
Even if you're straight, for sure. They get them too. But I think I feel like it holds a little bit more of a special meaning for our community.
How did you find yours?
I found mine through ballet, mm-hmm. my ballet friends, and then through drag as well. I have my drag family, and it's kind of created this wonderful, weird, queer family that it's very kind of mixed, and I have, they're all kind of in different fields, but I have a really nice, like, gay family.
And does your gay family interact with your biological family?
Actually,
how does that interplay?
Yeah, they do. Like, my, I think for like 3-4 Christmases in a row now, one of my drag queen friends in Toronto, she comes over to my house for Christmas every year, along with one of my gay ballet dancer friends. Mm-hmm. And then my mom makes it, and it's like tradition, my mom will make an extra plate of food and we'll go down to Woody's in Toronto on Church Street, and I'll bring the manager who's working Christmas dinner.
Oh, wow.
So it's like my mom always does that. And she came to the bars a bunch of times to watch Drag Race when it was airing. And everyone loves her. And the first time she came, I remember she actually started crying. She's like, I just couldn't believe how supportive and welcoming everybody was. She's like, I couldn't believe it. Everybody was this place that I thought was evil and bad my whole life and was taught to believe. I walked in and people just greeted me with open arms and were so sweet and loving towards me. And she's like, I couldn't believe it.
It's a big responsibility to have to change the minds of your parents.
It is. It really is. I mean, and I think a lot of times it just takes time. You just have to be patient with them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have to realize your parents were raised a certain way by parents who were raised a certain way. And that doesn't change overnight. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes a while for people to realize things and change. And it took my mom about I'd say a good 10 years to kind of come to terms with everything, and then slowly but surely come around. And I think it's kind of when she realized she just wasn't really a part of my life anymore.
Like, oh, she was losing you.
Yeah. I was still there, but she didn't know what was happening in my world. Because she didn't want to know. And I didn't want to tell her because I didn't want to make her sad, or I didn't want it to be awkward. And so she just was kind of losing her son.
That's very sad.
Yeah. But thankfully she realized it, and she was like, okay, well, I want my son back. So
you had to find a lot of patience though in your heart to be able to withstand those years and still maintain the relationship.
It was fine. It was fine for me. Honestly, I was busy. I had other things. I had other things to think about and worry about. And like I said, I had my gay family, and it's not like I was by any means ever shunned from my family. I was always very welcome.
Yeah.
And made to feel like I was welcome. But yeah, I think it was hard for her. I think it might have been a little bit harder for her than it was for me. It was hard to not be able to share that with your mom because you want them to be a part of your life. But I think seeing your child slowly drift away from you was hard for her.
Yeah, it's difficult. And your father and all of that? We're getting very personal.
Oh, that's fine. I don't really have a relationship with my father.
Right.
Just not really interested.
Okay.
That's all I want. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's going to be a while probably before the world changes enough that our dads.
Yeah. It's just not my. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
But so much of this, I think, is about finding a comfortable place in the world for mm-hmm. for yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a bad transition, but as we were having some technical difficulties just a few seconds ago, we stopped recording, and you said that because right now you're wearing a jogging pants.
I'm very comfortable right now.
Very comfortable. That you're actually quite uncomfortable when you're in drag.
Yeah, it's not comfortable.
Yeah.
You're corseted, your genitals are tucked somewhere they're not supposed to be tucked.
Yeah.
You have a things glued to you. It's not comfortable. It's like it's almost enjoyable in an uncomfortable way for a bit.
Okay.
But my favorite, truly one of my favorite parts of drag is taking it off. I love becoming me again at the end when it's done and I get a release from this uncomfortableness and just be completely free and myself again. It's almost like I feel the most free when I take it off.
But people perceive you as the most free when you have it on because mm-hmm. they see how
in a way
exuberant you become.
And it's in a way I am. I mean, it's another just like expressing another side of myself. But if we're talking actual when am I in the most comfortable? When am I in the most relaxed? It would be right now after I've just taken it all off.
In a sense, we're all drag queens because we all put on a mask mm-hmm. in the morning to go to work and, mm-hmm. and uncomfortable shoes and everything.
Absolutely.
Else.
But then when you get to come home at the end of the day and just lie on the couch and just be yourself, I think is the best part for me.
But you need that drive.
You do need that drive. And it's all about balance. Like I love, if I was like this all the time, I would be bored. So mm-hmm. you need the uncomfortableness to make this part more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like you need the balance. And I love what I do. It's my job though. I love it, but it's very much become my job and my career. Like anybody else's job and career, that how they feel about that, that's the same way I feel about drag now.
And you have to be a perfectionist to do that, especially as a ballet dancer. I guess you must be like levels of perfectionism uh-huh. that others don't have, maybe.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I try not to go too crazy because it just drives you mad. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you just cannot control things, and you just have to learn to let go a little bit.
Yeah.
But I know what I like, and I know the way I like it, and I like being in control.
Right,
I love being in control. I'm very good at it.
Yeah, well, good for you.
Yeah.
And that's how you became who you are.
And that's why I love my job, is because I'm in control. I'm the boss. I'm Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah.
This is my company. I'm the CEO.
Of a company of one.
Of company of one.
Yeah.
And I call the shots on my life, and everything I get to do is my decision. And I love that.
That's also a way in which you can be an inspiration to others.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the fact that just working for yourself, I think, is the greatest thing.
Is there a... We were speaking to Michelle Salt, the Paralympic snowboarder, yesterday on the podcast, and obviously there's an age limit to being an athlete.
Yes.
Right? Now she works in other fields and she does conferences and such things. Is there an age limit to drag, or will you be... Do you think you've got 20, 30 years of drag ahead of you?
Oh...
Oh, that's a tough question.
Like,
maybe.
Oh, well, there's not an age limit to drag. I mean, if you're good,
yeah,
and you're popular, you can keep going forever. I know lots of great entertainers who haven't been on TV who are in their 50s and 60s, and
RuPaul is not young.
No, he's not. But he's on TV, and he's kind of on a different echelon than the rest of us.
Yes.
Rightfully so. But like entertainers who have never been on TV, never had the opportunity, but who are like in their 50s, sometimes even 60s, and they're still doing great.
Yeah.
So it can be, if you work hard at it, if you're smart, if you are professional, if you are talented, if you know how to adapt with the changing times, and if you're an entertainer, then... Absolutely. You can make this a full-time, full-life career. Do I want to be performing in bars in 10 years? No. Do I want that kind of life? No. I mean, I think drag will always be a part of my life. I would love for it to transition a little bit more into the way like something like RuPaul. Like, that's very inspiring to me, the way he's a drag queen, but he's kind of taken it to the next level.
Yeah.
I would love to do that as well.
Which it seems that you're poised to do that in Canada, because you're getting involved into
Canada's Drag Race.
Maybe you're the next one.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I don't ever want to compare myself to Ru, because I mean, he's really just kind of broken the glass ceiling for drag queens.
Yeah.
So I don't feel comfortable being compared to him, because I don't think we're very much alike in that way. He's on another level than I am completely. I'm just trying to do my own thing, and I kind of want to forge my own path, but I'm so inspired by him, and I will forever be thankful for the doors he's opened up for me and the opportunities he's given me. Like, I could never have, in my wildest of dreams, dreamed any of this.
Where do you think drag is going? What will drag look like in 10 years, in 15 years? It's changed so much
so
in the
much.
Past 10 years.
I don't know. I think it's clearly mainstream now.
Yes.
I don't see it become unmainstreamed. Like, I think drag is here, and it's kind of here to stay.
Right.
Like, I think we're going to continue to see a lot more queer representation in TV shows and movies, and hopefully it just gets more and more and more until it becomes a normal thing. Mm-hmm. Until it becomes a thing where people aren't like, oh, there's a drag queen in this movie, and it becomes like a big deal. Like, first drag queen to do this, first drag queen to... If it's just like, oh, yeah, cool, I'm a drag queen and I'm in that movie.
Well, even the fact that you're here today... You know, as one of the faces of a very mainstream Canadian brand.
Yes, exactly.
Is a sign that drag is becoming universal.
Completely. It's becoming mainstreamed. And like we were chatting earlier during our technical difficulties, I think it's so cool that I think the greatest thing the show has done is it's humanized us. It's brought us into people's living rooms, drag queens into people's living rooms, and drag queens... And people who probably before the show saw drag queens as circus freaks and like low lives and drug addicts and all these things. And it's kind of brought us into their living rooms, and it's humanized us, and it's given us stories, and it's shown behind the mask. It's shown who we actually are.
Yeah.
That we're all people with families and issues and feelings just like everybody else. And I think it's kind of made people a lot more comfortable with us.
That, and I think also perhaps respect for the craft, because the most impressive thing about those kind of shows is just how quickly you turn around your costumes, mm-hmm. how quickly you're able to put on a show and learn a song mm-hmm. and compete in a matter of hours or days. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So people now see you as professionals, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's an actual job. We're actual artists.
Yeah.
Like we really, and we're really the only art form that you are required to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like you're just like, you're kind of responsible for everything. The performance aspect, the costuming, the styling, mm-hmm. the choreography most of the time, like everything is kind of comes down to you. So it's like a really all encompassing job.
But you're still keeping a toe in ballet, so to speak?
A little bit, yes. Yeah, I'll actually be performing in a couple of weeks with the Ballet Trocadero, my old ballet company in Toronto. So I've been furiously trying to get back in shape for that.
My God, huh? Doing point?
Doing ballet class and doing point and all that good stuff. I'm very excited, though. It's going to be a really special couple of days.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Also to be part of a troupe, which I guess as a drag queen, well, I suppose with the show you were part of a troupe, but
yeah. And before I got on the show, I've been living in Nashville for 5 years now, and I was on cast at a Play Dance Bar, which is the big dance club down there, and that was very much like being with the ballet company in mm-hmm. a way, because there's seven of us on cast together, and it was very much the idea of teamwork, and we all had to work together to mm-hmm. kind of put on a really great show. So a lot of times drag queens work alone and they don't understand that sense of teamwork. But I think it's such a valuable lesson to know how to work as a team with people and know how to get along with people and know how to respect people.
That too is probably the future of drag as well. The possibility of putting on a cast ensemble and building complex shows and showing up as a group of entertainers that wow you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you ever move back up to Canada? Why stay in Nashville?
Well, because I have a green card in the States. And I mean, I am up here a lot, but the majority of my work is still kind of in the States.
Yeah.
But yeah, one day I might. I love Canada.
And Queen in the North.
I know, Queen of the North who's living in the South. I know, it's kind of a... But I'm up here, like, I'm honestly up here more now than when I lived in Canada, if that makes sense. Or when I in the last year since I've been on the show, I have been up in Canada more than ever. Like, I'm up here at least once a month. And before I would come up maybe like twice a year.
Right.
So that's great. I mean, I feel like more of a Canadian now than I have in the past.
Yeah, and now you're going to be in a whole bunch of stores across the country.
I know.
Inspiring ladies.
I know. It's kind of even like just imagine like a drag queen like in a campaign for a women's clothing store.
Well, we're lucky to have you.
I'm so lucky to be here. This whole experience is just, it really has. Every day it kind of exceeds my wildest expectations. Like one thing after another, all these crazy things happen. And I never for a second forget how very lucky I am to be here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.